Seattle voters are upset with city leaders, regardless of their political beliefs. When the city council repealed the head tax on large employers like Amazon, supporters and opponents chanted so loudly that council members could not hear the vote. The council took that action because a campaign had collected thousands of signatures for a ballot repeal. This is a moment of political discontent, and to put it in context, I talked with Margaret O'Mara, a history professor at the University of Washington, and she says Seattle has always been a company town.
You had the era of the timber barons at the beginning of the late 19th, early 20th century. You had the Boeing era, of course. You had the era where Microsoft was really the one that was, you know, most closely associated with Seattle. Now you have Amazon becoming a dominant player in the, certainly in the consciousness, even though there are many large companies in Seattle.
Has that always kind of influenced the political makeup of the town?
There has been a constant throughout Seattle history, this interesting kind of contradictory political dynamic of pro-business leadership in City Hall, even though you may have political liberals, but also interested in sustaining economic growth and the vitality of the region's leading employers, but also a strong political tradition of activism from the left, of labor activism. I mean, this was the site of the greatest general strike in American history, the Seattle General Strike of 1919. We've got the centenary coming up next year, where you have both a worker mobilization on a mass scale and a conservative political and civic leadership that's kind of pushing against that. And that dynamic has been sustained over time.
I wonder how the population boom is changing the political climate. We hear a lot from people who say, you know, that they're losing control of their city, especially when you talk to long-term residents.
That's right. But this is not the first time that Seattle has felt that. Again, this has been a place that has had successive waves of massive influx of population, starting in the 19th century, of course, but around the time of World War II, there was a big surge in the 80s and 90s. Do you remember the Lesser Seattle movement started by Emmett Watson, only half jokingly, with all those Californians coming up and buying up real estate? And so when the city and the region are prosperous, you have a new wave of residents, and the people who are here feel like they want the Seattle that they came to stay the way it was.
This is a place where voters seem to have a lot of information, a very informed electorate about issues, candidates, officials. How does that affect the tone of public debate?
Sometimes people talk about low information voters as being a problem in political discourse. I think Seattle has high information electorate. And I think that's a dynamic in the debate about housing and homelessness, where a lot of the counter arguments put up against the head tax have been, well, there's a lot of money already being spent. Maybe it's not being coordinated across the region. And skepticism about whether the leadership can do what it's promising to do with a very thorny and complex problem that it's not going to have one single fix.
Well, so I think about watching a Seattle City Council meeting, for example. There are sometimes demonstrations and chanting, and it gets kind of raucous. And then there are frequent lawsuits against the city. There are signature campaigns. I wonder if that's the experience of city leadership in other places.
What's interesting at this moment in Seattle now is this sort of polite Seattle process, a place where you don't have people shouting in council meetings. That hasn't usually been the way it's played out in Seattle, although it's played out in other places. And I think that we are at a moment where there's a lot of stress being put on Seattle's municipal institutions, on the infrastructure. There have been problems that have been, again, long in the making. You know, there were housing problems before this current boom driven by Amazon and others. But the boom time is really making more people squeezed and making it much more visible.
Given the lessons of history, what's the way forward here? How do officials win back trust?
I think by listening to not just the loudest voices in the room, but including citizens who don't have time to, you know, engage with in civic affairs as actively as they might like to, find ways to get more people engaged, to recognize that in a fast-growing metro area, there has to be more density, that things are going to change. And I think the most important thing history can teach us is that this is a city that has changed radically over time, where hills have been torn down and buildings been torn down and other things been pulled up. And it has changed demographically. It is constantly in flux. And, you know, the way forward is to recognize the change is going to happen and think about how can you make the change happen in a way that is going to more broadly benefit the largest amount of people. Where change often brings sharpened inequality, how can we have change and growth that actually increases equality?
So just as I might shake my fist at the sky when something I love about Seattle changes, whether it's a restaurant or a road, others have been standing on this street shaking their fist at the sky before me.
Yes, someone was just as angry at that restaurant being built as you are distressed about it being torn down.
Margaret O'Mara, professor of history at the University of Washington, thank you so much for your time.
It was my pleasure. Thanks.